And let's welcome Tom Appel to the show. Hi, Tom.
Hello.
How are you?
I am very well, thank you.
Good, good, good. Happy birthday.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know it was your birthday today until I logged into Facebook, and then it reminded me.
Yeah, you and Dan would be the first persons I have spoken to now that I'm in my mid-50s.
You're in your mid-50s?
I'm now in my mid-50s.
Oh, okay. Is that, no, you know what? Is that, I think you and I are the same age. Did you turn?
Yeah, we are.
You turned, so, 54 is mid-50s?
I think so. Oh. Is it? I don't know.
Oh, boy. All right. All right. Well, I'll be turning that 50. I'll be getting into my mid-50s in July, so that. All right, I was putting it off by one more year. I was just going to say 55 is mid 50s.
I think one, two, three are early, and then four makes you mid.
Oh man! All right,
but I don't know that for sure. So maybe you're off the hook.
All right, okay. Well, anyway, happy birthday, Tom.
Thank you.
All right, tell everybody about Consumer Guide Automotive as we do every month.
Yeah, Consumer Guide Automotive. It is a new car and used car review site. All of our car reviews live at consumerguide.com. We try to have some fun with the car news and keep people informed of what's going on in the auto world. And that's at our blog. That's the CG Daily Drive blog. And you can just get there from consumerguide.com. It's right there. It says visit our blog. So easy to find.
Lots of really informative and fun stuff on the website. And what have you? I always ask you when we get you on for the first segment here, what have you been driving lately?
I am driving the 2019 Toyota Corolla XSE hatchback.
Mm.
And for the first time ever, I can say that I'm enjoying driving a Corolla.
For the first time ever?
Yeah, the Corolla has just always been such a sort of mediocre vehicle dynamically. They last forever, they get good mileage, and there's lots of reasons why people would have enjoyed them. But finally, they're fun to drive. The Corolla hatchback was redesigned for 2018. It's all new architecture. It looks a little sportier. It feels a whole lot sportier. But yeah, nice little car. My only complaint about this car at all is the limited rear seat space.
Mm, okay. All right. How's the hatchback working out?
The hatchback is great. It's a big hatch. Both rear seats fold completely flat, so you can put a lot of stuff back there if you need to. Great car for a single person who lives in the city.
Okay. Wow, that's cool. All right. And what else have you been driving since the last time we talked?
Also another Toyota. I was driving the Prius C, which is the little version of the Prius, and I managed to drive that during the heart of the cold spell.
Oh, God.
So a vehicle that we usually see 50 to 55 miles per gallon from, during the cold snap, we dropped to just about 37 miles per gallon. So still really good hybrid mileage, but you can see the impact that cold has on hybrid or electric car batteries.
Oh, wow. Wow, wow, wow. And what else has anybody else been driving? Any other reports that you guys have been doing?
We have coming next week, and we'll be tweeting about this a lot, we have the Jaguar I-Pace coming. That's Jaguar's first all-electric vehicle.
Wow.
So that is a compact crossover. It's all electric. Huge electric battery, 95 kilowatt hours. So all sorts of range from that. So we're really excited to get that in the office.
Okay. Very, very, very cool. All right, Tom, listen, why don't you hang on, okay?
Will do.
And we're going to take a break when we come back. You mentioned that you were driving a car around during this cold snap, but you also we have got tips for cold car care.
Yeah.
So and boy, that last week was just brutal.
It was ugly.
Oh, it was ugly. So, but we want to prepare people and help them out and give them tips for how to take care of their car during these cold weeks and months. All right, Tom,
hang on.
All right, Tom Appel is with us, and we're talking about cars. He's publisher of Consumer Guide and Consumer Guide Automotive. You can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. And any car or automotive related question you have, call us up. Text us at 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline Studio on a Tuesday. That means two for Tuesday. Two for Tuesday! One artist, two songs. Get them going. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. And, also coming up, we're going to be talking about the coolest and most memorable and awesome TV and movie cars and vehicles. And we'll let you know what foods we're eating incorrectly. That's all coming up on the show. But joining us right now is Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. He contributes to their Daily Drive blog, and you can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. And he joins us for his monthly visit where we talk all things automotive. And if you have any questions related to cars or automotive, you need some advice, 312-981-7200. Tom, welcome back.
Thank you.
So we mentioned this brutal cold snap that we just endured last week. And there's bound to be at least one or two more, you know, before the end of the we still got about 2 months of this to go, I would imagine, you know. We want to give people advice on how to deal with such extreme cold and cold in general when it comes to car care. So what are we looking at here?
Yeah, one of the most the most obvious thing that's going to happen, the thing that plagues the most people, is your battery dying. And the thing is that a battery's fine most of the year, unless it gets extremely hot or extremely cold. But the fact is that a car battery that's 3 years old, 4 years old, is probably not going to give you the best service if the weather gets extreme. So think about replacing those. OEM, original equipment batteries from the factory, usually good for 3 years. So if you've gotten through your fourth winter, absolutely think about just replacing that battery. There's not a lot you can do about it once it gets cold. If you can park indoors, that's a huge help.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're stuck outdoors, best thing you can do, if you really want to do something, is go outside and start your car for a few hours, which is just not a practical thing to do.
Yeah, that's what my, you know, it makes me nuts, but that's what my dad does. He goes outside in that insane weather and starts up the car, you know, to keep the battery, you know, at least a little warmer than it would be outside there. But that's an old practice. That's something that people have been doing forever. Whenever it got cold out, people would go out, start their car up, you know, and then go back in the house for a while and let the thing run. And that's still okay to do, right? I mean, you're going to be cold for a while, but it'll warm up the car a little, right?
Yeah, it absolutely will. And letting your car idle in cold weather is not really damaging to the car. It's good to get everything warmed up and get the oil moved around the engine. It's just a great idea. And your battery gets charged. So
right.
No, apart from using a little gas, there's really no downside.
Well, now, what about going to your mechanic and getting it winterized? What would you suggest for people who want to be? It's a little late now because we're into February.
It is a little late, and what we used to call winterizing is a little less necessary than it used to be. The cooling systems on our cars are largely sealed now, so you don't really need to do that. You can have it checked when you get your oil changed, for example, at some place like Jiffy Lube or at your dealership. They usually check all these fluids anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, people don't lose coolant anymore. That's not a thing. But if you can check, if you have the wherewithal, and if you're at a mechanic, you know, have them do it. That's great. And if you're behind schedule and getting that maintenance done, by all means, have it done. The other thing to do, and this is something that Rick Cotta, that Consumer Guide, recommends, is use up all your windshield solvent before it gets cold, because the old stuff probably isn't good anymore.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, the alcohol in it evaporates off, just leaving you just water, basically. So use it up and put in fresh stuff.
Oh, that makes sense. Now, you know, the other thing about the fluids, you know, this is vital as well. How important is it to have your gas tank as full as possible?
Yeah, that's an interesting thing, and that's a little bit less necessary than it once was. The notion about keeping your gas tank full was to prevent air from getting in there, air which would have moisture in it, which could crystallize or freeze and freeze up your gas line. But the truth about that now is that almost all the gasoline we buy in Illinois is 10% ethanol, which absorbs that water. So what we used to do, we used to add heat, if people remember that, to the gas tank.
Yeah, H-E-E-T.
Yep. Completely unnecessary now because all of our gasoline is 10% ethanol. So adding a little more ethanol is not going to change anything.
What about, a lot of cars now are keyless and you're pressing the button, but they can freeze up. Is shooting some WD-40, is that still effective?
It's still effective and it's great. Yeah, if you use the key, that's a great thing to do. WD-40 won't freeze and it'll displace any moisture that might be in there. So if it was sticking, think about doing that. It's a great thing to do.
You know, it's so funny. Obviously I haven't driven in a long time, Tom, but I drove for a long time before. I'm just thinking about how I would keep WD-40 and heat in my trunk in the old days. You know, those two products that we just mentioned, they were staples in the trunk of my cars that I owned.
Yeah, because we had a Chrysler. One of the cars I drove a lot was a 74 Valiant with a legendary slant six engine.
Yeah.
And that engine did not want to start in the winter. So we had a can of starter fluid, if people remember
Oh, man.
Yeah, and that was just ether. It smelled like a dentist's office, but it was incredibly effective.
I totally forgot about that. Yeah, absolutely. What are your suggestions about, like, a couple of other simple things, like keeping your wipers ready to go? And, you know, because, you know, when the ice gets all over them, they could screw up visibility. How do you keep on top of the
Yeah, your wiper blades take such a beating in the winter. I almost feel bad for my wiper blades. But one of the things that you can do to help keep them supple and not hard during the winter so that they can stick to the windshield is to wipe them down with the windshield solvent.
Mm.
The alcohol in there softens the rubber a little bit. This isn't any sort of panacea, but it helps. So if you can just get a paper towel, soak it in windshield solvent, and just scrub the blade itself, that can help a little bit to keep them soft. So that's a nice thing to do.
And the last thing I wanted to ask you about was tire pressure. How important is that, and how do you stay on top of it?
Yeah, I don't know how you stay on top of it, but it's fairly important. You lose about 1 PSI of tire pressure for about every 10 degrees that the temperature falls. So if you're going from 80 degrees to zero, you have theoretically lost about 8 PSI of tire pressure. So it's great if you can get your tire pressure checked someplace or do it yourself. One of the things that's going to happen is, like around here, it went from 30 to 20.
I know.
And staying on top of that is tough. Plus, if you actually inflated the tires at 20 below, you're going to be way overinflated when we get back to 40 and 50. So sometimes you just have to sort of live with that and be aware that it might be a problem.
Yeah.
Most people who have cars saw that their tire pressure light went on during the cold snap.
Yeah.
Yeah, those don't work very well under zero. So you want to, even if it's on or it's off, just walk around the car to make sure they look okay.
Yeah, my dad's dashboard went nuts in the cold. Like, lights, stuff just started lighting up. The clock on the clock radio went nuts, and he had to reset it. Because, I mean, it was so cold. I mean, my God.
Yeah, LCD screens don't like to change. So it just looks like everything says 8888.
Exactly right. Exactly. Here's Joe on WGN with a question similar to what we're talking about. Hi, Joe.
Well, boy, the tube was supple and tire, you know, pressure, if you will. That's a natural lead-in. I told the wife the other day, about 3 days ago, right in the midst of the solar vortex, if you will. Now, start off slow. Don't use a lot of rotation, you know, on the accelerator to let the tires, you know, warm up a little bit because they're frozen too, just like they were sitting in the garage, you know.
Yep, that's true.
So what would you estimate is the approximate time to warm up a tire, if you will, at, you know, minus 20 degrees zero on an average, you know, related to speed? Give me that equation.
That's a great question, and I don't know the answer because part of the problem is that the concrete and pavement are cold too. Mm. But to your point, and it's a great point, and I didn't mention it, is that tires develop hard spots in the cold. So when it's 20 degrees below zero, the part of the tire that is actually on the ground doesn't want to turn, become round again as it rolls. It takes a while. You can actually feel that while you're driving. But I think that once you're up to speed, it'll probably take 4 or 5 minutes. That should happen pretty quickly.
Okay. All right, Joe, thanks for the call. And, all right, that's some very informative stuff. And again, you know, we're a little bit late. I know we're going to get, I'm sure we're going to get another brutal cold snap at some point before winter is completely over.
February's merciless.
Yeah, it is. It truly is. So just everybody stay prepared and stay on top of it and take the advice that Tom just gave you. Okay, Tom, hang on, okay?
Will do.
The Detroit Auto Show happened. You're going to give us a recap when we come back after the news, okay?
Sounds good.
All right, very cool. Tom Appel is with us. He joins us once a month. He's the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. He's a contributor to the Daily Drive blog. We have some texts coming in, and I'll throw them at Tom. And if you have questions or concerns or you need advice because you're in the market for a car or you have an automotive question, 312-981-7200. And the news is coming up right after this. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude every weekday morning, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. And we're talking cars here with Tom Appel. If you have any automotive question or you need some advice, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text. He's with Consumer Guide Automotive, and follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. Let's bring Tom back. Tom, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, we got some text. Then with the, then we'll talk about we'll recap. You can recap the Detroit Auto Show for us.
Sure.
Glenn says Tom just touched on this, but how do electric cars do generally in the cold? Do you have to charge them even more?
You don't have to charge them more. You have to accept reduced battery capacity. And there's kind of two stages of this. If you can charge a car inside a warm garage, you're going to do a little bit better. But once a battery gets cold, it loses about a third of its capacity at about 0 degrees. So it's a very significant hit in the Chicago area. The difference between summer and winter range is worth knowing about.
Okay. Okay. 847 area code says, hello, I just bought a 2012 Lincoln MKZ hybrid. I like it a lot. Like almost my whole 8-hour shift is that I idle a lot. I'm sorry. I idle a lot, like almost during my whole 8-hour shift. Is that bad for my car? It switches between hybrid mode and gas mode often, especially with the heater on lately. I'm concerned this might not be great for the engine. Any advice? Should I not idle as much? Side note, I'm still getting about 30 mpgs even with idle.
Wow, that's great. The thing about idling is that idling, one, uses gas, and two, your engine is still running. So you are accumulating engine wear and tear without actually accumulating miles. And it's a thing to think about when you're calculating when you should do an oil change. If your oil change is recommended to be 7,500 miles, maybe consider doing it 5,000 miles. It's not especially hard on your car unless the car starts to overheat. So the thing you want to watch for is the gauges on your dashboard and make sure the temperature light doesn't come on or the engine light doesn't come on. I mean, idling isn't the worst thing in the world. It's not great. It's not going to kill your car. If you're in a hybrid, it should periodically just shut off unless you have, for example, the heater air conditioning on.
Okay. 224 area code says, as a mechanic of 25 years, I've always wanted to write reviews. How does someone like me get involved in writing reviews?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I get it all the time. And the best way to do it is to find small websites that are just sort of starting out or don't have a lot of circulation yet and look like maybe they're just a little bit underfunded or are sort of working with one or two people, and offer them your content for free. Once they've published it, you become a published author, and you can work from there. Because your goal is to have enough content that's published so that you can reach out to a manufacturer and say, hey, I've got this published work. Maybe you can lend me press vehicles so I can write about those. That's sort of the stair-step method. It can take a while. It takes patience. But if you write good reviews, you can usually find someone who will take those, and eventually you can start charging for them.
Got it. All right, good advice. Okay, the Detroit Auto Show just ended. When was it, Tom?
It was the second week in January.
Okay, so it just recently ended, and what's the recap? How was it?
It was a little bit dull. I ended up not going because I took ill, but my guy Damon Bell did go out to Detroit, and he kept us all very well informed. One of the most interesting things about this particular Detroit Auto Show is it's the last ever January Detroit Auto Show.
Really?
Yeah, the Detroit Auto Show is moving to June next year. So we're going to have this big gap, this big 16-month gap between auto shows now. And the reason for it is very interesting. One of the things that's happened is that the Consumer Electronics Show begins right at the beginning of the year, and they've been stealing automotive stuff.
Sure.
Yeah, Ford has been big there, Mercedes has been big there, and all the attention's been going to CES. And as we talk more about autonomous cars and connectivity and all this stuff, cars are becoming a little bit more electronic and a little bit more appliance and falling more into the purview of the kind of people who write content based on CES. So Detroit's been having a hard time getting stuff for the show. So Detroit is going to vacate that spot. That's good news for the Chicago Auto Show, which kicks in February. Actually, it starts this coming Saturday. And then the New York Auto Show probably will fare a little bit better, too, because that's in April.
Wow. Well, what were some of the highlights of the Detroit show that you heard?
Well, one of the big ones was the return of the Toyota Supra, which we should have seen during the Super Bowl yesterday. But after a long gap, the Supra used to be kind of a high-end esports car. It's kind of a grand touring car. It was a little bit big and heavy. It's back now, and the car is very interesting because it's part of a cooperation with BMW. So this is based on BMW Z4. BMW and Toyota developed this car together. But it looks like a fun car. I don't know anyone who's driven it yet, but the prices start around $40,000, and it's a lot of potential there. Also, finally, Cadillac, after not having much of a crossover for a number of years, last year launched the X4, which was a compact crossover. At the Detroit Auto Show, launched the XT6, which is a three-row, seven-passenger midsize crossover. So all of a sudden, Cadillac's got lots of crossovers, so that was there as well.
Did they we were talking about this conflict between the Consumer Electronics Show. How did it go? Was attendance still pretty high for the Detroit Auto Show?
Oh, I don't know what the consumer attendance was. Based on people who were there, they're telling me that the media wasn't covering the show with quite the level of fervor that they have in the past. And there were a lot of one of the things that happened to Detroit too, and this has to do with the geography and the economics of the area. Virtually no European manufacturers displayed at Detroit this year. Audi, Mercedes-Benz, BMW, Jaguar, Rolls-Royce, all these companies decided to pass on the Detroit Auto Show this year.
Wow, that's interesting. Is there a reason for that?
Money. One of the things that's happening too with China coming online is that there are auto shows in China and in India that manufacturers need to be at as well. So the resources are being spread a little bit thin. And if you're a luxury maker, it's good to be in China, and it's good to be sometimes in Abu Dhabi, for example. So it's hard to justify the money for Detroit, where the local economy doesn't really justify showing vehicles that cost $200,000 or $300,000.
Oh, wow. And now, were there any other highlights that were worthy of mentioning from Detroit?
Yeah, a couple of interesting things. There's an all-new Ford Explorer coming out. That's pretty cool. And Dodge just showed, it's just audaciously styled, the brand new Ram heavy-duty trucks. Those will be there as well, were there as well.
Mm, okay. And now what are we looking forward to at our auto show? And it begins this weekend.
Yeah. We've got some news from Subaru coming up. There are five or six good reveals. I think that those are all embargoed at this point, so I don't think I can say what they are. But all that news pops on Thursday. So if you want to check Consumer Guide, check our blog. We'll have that news come up live as it happens.
Mm-hmm. I used to love to go to the auto show. I haven't gone in a really long time, and we've talked about this before, Tom. You know, you walk out of there with two shopping bags full of the books. And
absolutely.
Yeah. Do they still do that? Can you still grab a whole bunch of those things?
Not as many as you used to. A lot of them now give you cards with a URL to go to, or sometimes you'll get a little jump drive. But, yeah, you don't get the brochures as much as you used to. Yeah. I still have bags full of them someplace at home.
Yeah, that was one of the highlights, man, was grab as many brochures as you can as you're walking around.
Yeah, those are good-looking, large, four-color brochures.
Yeah,
they were awesome.
They were beautiful. They were fantastic. Yeah. And now, how many days are you going to be going?
I'm going to be down there Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday.
Okay. So you looking forward to it then?
I am, yeah. One of the things that Consumer Guide does as well is we you and I have already talked about our best buys for the year.
Yeah.
But we actually present our trophies at the Chicago Auto Show.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, so we meet up with manufacturers and hand them the actual trophies, and sometimes there's a photo op. Because, you know, people want pictures of me. so we take care of that at the auto show as well.
That
so it's a big deal for Consumer Guide.
Very cool. That'll be a fun time for you. So the Chicago Auto Show, it begins. It's open to the public starting on Saturday, correct, on the 9th?
Yep.
And it goes through the 18th.
That's right.
Okay, so February 9th through the 18th, you can check out the Chicago Auto Show. And, of course, it's at McCormick Place, as it is every year.
Absolutely, yeah. And if you could somehow manage to get down there during a weekday, that's just a great time to go.
Yeah, we used to, you know, we've done remotes from the auto show here years past at WGN. And it was always fun to do a remote from the auto show. Always a blast.
Yeah, that's a great place. It's such a big, even when it's crowded, it doesn't feel that crowded. That's just such a good venue.
It is. And it's been a McCormick Place forever.
Yeah. The old McCormick Place and then the new McCormick Place. But it's something like a million square feet now, if you can imagine.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
It really is
huge.
Unbelievable. Well, it's going to be good. The Chicago Auto Show begins this weekend. And I know that people love to go to the auto show. And you can check out keep everybody's going to be kept posted here at Consumer Guide Automotive. You can check out consumerguide.com. They will be definitely covering the auto show. All right. We got a few texts here before we break, okay, Tom?
Okay.
773 area kid says, I'm in the market for a used midsize SUV for around $7,000. Any ideas?
Around $7,000 is a little tough. So you're definitely going private party because a lot of dealerships won't stock those. I'm trying to think what to do for that price. Some of the most overlooked vehicles are the Hyundais and Kias, and they tend to have lower resale value. So if you're looking for, you said midsize, so
yeah,
a Santa Fe or Sorento. It's a Kia Santa Fe or, I'm sorry, Hyundai Santa Fe or Kia Sorento might be a good place to look.
Okay. All right. Let's see. 815 area code says, what is the lowest priced car available in the U.S.?
I don't know the exact answer to that, but it is probably the Hyundai Accent, I think, because I think there's still a version of that you can get out the door with an automatic under $16,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Okay. 847 area code says, what does Tom think? Well, you just talked about this unveiling. Tom, think about the 2020 Toyota Supra. It recently sold at auction for $2.1 million. Have you heard any negative feedback?
The only negative feedback is coming from the media because they all think it's not styled aggressively enough. I don't know. Until we drive it, we won't know. It is rear drive. It is an inline six. It is a Supra. Hopefully it lives up to that name. I suspect it's going to be a great car.
Okay. 773 area code says, I love my 2005 Dodge Grand Caravan with 238,000 miles.
Wow.
Even though rust has taken over, I'm still riding. It's still riding great. My question is, what would be a comparable vehicle? Oh, he sees the end in sight.
Yeah. Well, there still is a Grand Caravan. That's the good news. It was supposed to have been discontinued 2 years ago, but there is still a brand new Dodge Grand Caravan. If you're looking for a deal, there are 2 or 3 year old examples of that out there that are probably pretty affordable.
Okay. And speaking of lots of mileage, our listener Doc, Tom.
Doc, yes.
Tell us about this. He's going to hit a million miles in his Civic.
Yeah, Doc and I, last time I was on the radio with you,
yeah,
Doc called in and we finally connected offline and we've been talking by email and Doc sent me pictures of Doc with his Civic. Yeah, it's a 2008 Civic with 980,000 miles on it. And I absolutely want to write about this guy and his car. Doc, as you might expect, kind of crazy. He's awesome. I love talking to this guy.
Yeah, no, we know Doc's a regular listener. He's called in before. We know Doc's special.
So I'm very much looking forward to writing this. But I'm going to share this. Once I've got the story up, I'll make sure I share it with you guys. I want to get it to the Honda folks because I think they're going to want to talk to Doc about this.
Absolutely. Now, how often does something like that happen, a million miles?
Not often anymore because people just don't hold on to their cars that long. It takes a certain amount of dedication to do that. But he's managing to put 100,000 miles a year on his car and keep it running.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Okay. Tom, hang on, all right?
Will do.
All right. Tom Appel is with us. He is a publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. He contributes to their Daily Drive blog. You can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. And we got a couple more car stories to talk about. And if you have any and all automotive related questions, call or text right now at 312-981-7200. More with Tom Appel after this. Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio. It's Tuesday. That means two for Tuesday. Get your request in now. Yeah, two for Tuesday. Yeah, so 312-981-7200. We're talking cars now with Tom Appel, and then we're going to jump into the coolest movie and TV cars of all time and reminisce about those and remember how cool those things were. And much more. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right, let's get back. From Consumer Guide Automotive, it's Tom Appel. Let's welcome Tom back. Tom, welcome back.
Thank you.
So the North American Car of the Year is from South Korea.
Yeah, it is.
Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, the NACTOY, that's the North American Car of the Year, is awarded by a jury. I think it's 50 jurors now. Some of them have been around for a long time. Some of them are newer. But it's a very prestigious award. And a couple of those journalists come from here in the Chicago area, including Kirk Bell, who writes for Internet Brands. He's one of the local jurors. And they pick a car and truck of the year. And recently they've added utility. of the year. And this year they picked three vehicles. These were announced at the Detroit Auto Show. And the car of the year this year was the Hyundai Kona.
Oh, okay.
Which is a very nice small crossover and absolutely deserving of the award. And Consumer Guide also named it a Best Buy. So we're sort of in the same, we're thinking the same way as those guys are there. But also awarded, so that was the utility of the year. Car of the year also went to Hyundai. It was the Genesis G70. For people who don't know, Genesis is Hyundai's new luxury brand. It's been around for about three model years now. And the G70 is a small sedan, very much in competition with the BMW 3 Series. And G70 is a very nice little car. It's fun to drive. It's sporty. A little cramped. We didn't pick it just because we think it's not quite as family passenger friendly as it could be, but it's a heck of a good car. And then finally they picked truck of the year, and that's this year it was the Ram 1500 pickup, which was also a Consumer Guide Best Buy.
Now, do they have nominees and narrowing it down, or how does the voting process work?
Yeah, they have a preliminary vote and they nail it down to, I think it's 3, 4, or 5 vehicles in each category. And then they have a private vote, and then no one knows what it is until the morning of the first day of the Detroit Auto Show.
And that's when it's unveiled at the Detroit Auto Show.
Yep.
How long has NACTOY been around, these awards?
Wow, they've been around a long time. Jim Matea of the Tribune was one of the founding members. But I want to say NACTOY's been around 25 years, maybe?
Wow, okay.
Yeah, something like that.
And they do this every year?
They do this every year, yep.
All right, very, very cool. Here's an interesting partnership that there's a story here in front of me. Ford is going to partner with Volkswagen to build electric cars and more.
Yeah, this is an interesting story, and it's been whispered about now for a number of months, and it's finally in the aftermath of the Detroit Auto Show that there's some clarity has been given to what this is. A lot of people thought it might be an actual partnership where they would swap stock or something like that, but it's not quite a commitment of that level yet, but it's a big deal. Ford and Volkswagen have signed letters of intent to co-develop electric vehicles, but additionally, Volkswagen is going to start building for Ford commercial vehicles to sell in Europe, which is a pretty big deal. So we're going to be seeing more and more partnerships like this as it becomes more and more expensive to develop new vehicles, and because everyone's got to come up with some way to pay for electric vehicles.
Right, right. Well, that's interesting. Ford and Volkswagen partner.
Yeah, kind of an unlikely partnership.
Absolutely, yeah. Okay, I want to talk quickly about one of the pieces that that you wrote for the Daily Drive.
Okay.
What was the Hindustan ambassador?
Yes.
What is
it? I love this. I love this car, and I love this story.
Okay.
America has the Model T, and India has the Hindustan ambassador.
Okay.
This is a car that very interesting car, but Hindustan was a small Indian automaker that began doing stuff in the late 40s, maybe mid 40s, and they were basically building under license vehicles that they licensed and got the tooling from an English company, Morris, by the third generation or so of doing that, they decided to just buy the rights outright, and that became the first mass-produced Indian car built in India. It was a version of the Morris Oxford, which came to be known as the Hindustan Ambassador, and it was very affordable, it was very accessible, incredibly reliable, and very cheap to own, and it basically was a car that put India on wheels. The affordability was really key, and the reliability and the fixability of it, but the car went into Mark, I think it went on the market in 1958. It was on sale until 2014.
Wow.
Largely unchanged. And if you look at it, it looks very much like it had been around that long.
Yeah.
But it is a beloved vehicle in India. It's just an amazing piece of Indian culture that this vehicle was around like that. And everyone owned one. Everyone had stories about them. Everyone saw them. If you were in India at any time in the 70s, 80s, or 90s, you know that every single taxi cab was a Hindustan ambassador.
Uh-huh.
But all told, over that period, they sold about 4 million of those guys.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's just a really cool car.
What a great story. And if people want to read the entire story, because you detail all the marks, Mark 1, Mark 2, all the way up until 2014, you go into detail on that. It's really a fascinating story.
Yeah, and a really interesting piece. If you look at the Mark 1, 2, and 3, there's a little bitty hole in the front bumper right in the center. That is so you can crank start the car.
That's great.
Yeah, the battery's dead. You can crank start your Hindustan Ambassador.
And it's also a great name, too.
It is.
Yeah. Okay, real quick, a few texts before we let you go, okay,
Tom? Okay.
Joe says, I know Tom has recommended the Chevy Equinox in the past. What does he think of the 2019?
Oh, I like the Equinox. I like the Equinox more than anyone else at Consumer Guide. So full disclosure, it's not a Consumer Guide Best Buy, but I really like it, especially with the 2-liter engine. Great fuel economy, great use of space, really nice ride and handling. The interior could be nicer.
Okay, here's a good one. 312 says, I love to drive manual transmission. What cars still have stick shift?
Selectively, there's a couple of good cars that still have it. Almost every Volkswagen, every compact Volkswagen, the Subaru Impreza, versions of the Honda Civic, the Corolla I'm driving right now, the Corolla XSE hatchback still has a stick. Mm-hmm. There's a number of them out there, but what you're finding is that they're limited to certain trim levels now, which is depressing.
Yeah. 815 area code says, what do you think of Colorado, and is there much difference in Canyon of a price difference?
Well, the Colorado is the Chevy midsize pickup, and the Canyon is the GMC midsize pickup. And they are a little bit different. The Canyon's available with all-wheel drive, where the Colorado is just available with part-time four-wheel drive. The interior is much nicer on the GMC. Whether or not the price difference is worth it is kind of up to you. The thing about that price difference is you get it back in resale value, so you're not losing that money. I think the Chevy's just fine, but the GMC is nicer.
Okay. And then finally, is there going to be a Ford Bronco released in 2020?
I think it's a 2021.
Oh, okay.
I think we're going to see it this year, but the Bronco is a midsize SUV, not a crossover, but an actual body-on-frame old-school truck based on the new Ranger. It's going to be built in America, probably not super high volume, but there's a lot of people looking forward to it.
Okay. All right. And, Tom, it's always a pleasure. People can read you at consumerguide.com. You have access to the, you can get to the blog there as well, and you can follow Tom on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. Tom, thanks again. And again, happy birthday, my friend. Have a great
one. Oh, thank you. Yeah.
Okay, we'll talk to you next month.
Talk to you then.
Tom Appel, everybody. Happy birthday to Tom. All right, we'll take a quick break. And speaking of cars and vehicles, we are going to talk about some of the coolest and most memorable and awesome TV and movie vehicles. And we'll reminisce about that. And we want to hear from you guys and your favorites at 312-981-7200.